This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Hi, I'm Tim Bray, and this is Small Things That Matter, the show about little things that most people overlook, the quiet ideas, small actions, and the unexpected stories that make people and communities better. So we've all been there. You're right in the middle of getting stuff done, then like an old, overworked PC encountering this critical error, the mouse freezes. The fan screams with its high-pitched whine, and there it is. The blue screen of death. Well, my guest today is Mark Hastie, and he's lived with this human equivalent to this system crash his entire life. He's not some clinical expert on the clock, but this regular guy with a deep, lived experience who's learned this stuff at the kitchen table, all while managing his own type 1 diabetes and growing up alongside his sister with severe autism. He spent his entire life watching how society loves to dump these labels on people, these labels that, with the best intentions, just drip with judgment. I'm talking words like suffering, afflicted, high needs, or they're just special. Or treating someone's day-to-day life like it's an absolute tragedy. Mark's noticed this type of vocabulary acts like this massive system overload that instead of helping others, it just triggers this human blue screen of death where people completely close up shop. Now, I know what some of you might be thinking. I don't think Mark's going to say Control-Alt-Delete today. I don't think he's going to call the IT guy and go, you know what? This is a lost cause. Let's just pull the plug.
Yeah.
So welcome to the show, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
I want to start here. Growing up at the kitchen table and seeing the contrast between your actual daily life with your sister or with your diabetes and the way people on the outside, when they saw this, talked about it, when did you first realize that this world's vocabulary was basically just a trigger or a flashing blue screen of death in front of people?
Well, I guess when it comes to, you know, medical conditions or intellectual disabilities, they automatically assume they're like, you know, that person is suffering, that they're not going, that they're, you know, they're afflicted with hardship. When a matter of fact, you know, especially when it comes to type 1 diabetes, it's manageable. And, you know, I have people say, you know, it's like, oh, you know, it's got a lot of sugar in it. You can't eat that. I'm just like, actually, sorry, mate, I can't eat that. It's just I process things a lot more differently. It's a lot more of a manual handling than it is, you know, with your pancreas being able to, you know, produce insulin and whatnot.
I love that word manual handling, yep, too. Like that's... It's not saying that some tragedy. It's like just different.
It's different now. Yeah. I just have a different lived experience now, where, you know, I do have to be mindful of what I eat. You know, carbohydrates, especially. That is like, you know, as much as I love carbohydrates, they don't like me very much.
I would find that very hard.
Yeah. But you know, it's just really being mindful of, you know, what I'm eating and you know, how much I'm eating as well. But, you know, people, you know, it's like, oh, you can't eat. I remember when I was younger, one of my best friends, CJ, I think it was about 3 or 4 days after I got diagnosed, he, you know, this is just, it was just habit. He, you know, would always drink a lot of Coke, and he, you know, he came up to me, you know, during dinner, and he put a Coke in front of me, and I'm just like, oh, nah, sorry, man, like, I gotta avoid this stuff. And he felt really, really bad after that. But later on, as I got through life, a lot of people, you know, it's just the assumptions that, like, you know, oh, you have this, therefore you cannot do this. It's just like, no, I can do this. It's just that I have to manage it a lot more differently. Yeah, and I guess with my little sister, you know, she's very much on the severe end of autism. It is challenging. It really, really is. But she's one of the most, you know, beautiful people on the planet that I've ever known. But people assume, they're like, oh, you know, it must be really, really hard to deal with that. It's just like, yeah, it has its challenges. But, you know, it's taught me a lot about how to not be judgmental of people and what they're going through. And also, you know, it attuned my brain to looking at how does a particular condition impact someone? Not that they're suffering, not that they're afflicted, but how does it impact them? I wish, you know, that I could sit down one day and transfer my brain into hers, or at least have a spectator view of what does her life actually look like? What does it feel like, you know? Especially when it comes to her art. I should have brought her art piece today. And she had this obsession with grapes at one time, and the way that she portrays that, you know, it's beautiful. It really is. And so it's really important to you know, have that that understanding to see and walk in someone else's shoes to actually see what that's like. I think that's really, really important.
So was there a moment, or if you could take me back to a moment when you first realized that other people's language had this massive effect on them, you know, not in a good way?
Well, my mum, she's been pretty much the biggest influence in my life. She's a huge advocate for autism, you know, people with autism in New Zealand. And so I remember I was having a conversation with her one day, and me and my mum, we have people would look at us and think, oh, you guys have very serious conversations. It's like, well, not necessarily, but we have much more in-depth conversations.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I remember I was talking to her one day, and I was working on something, and she said, you know, don't say, you know, affected, or, I mean, like, in a clinical way, that is the right way, but in terms of, you know, in terms of someone's to get a better understanding, sorry, not better understanding, but have a more compassionate lens on it, is using the word impacted, because that's simply what they are. They are just impacted by it. I mean, some people who are, you know, who are really going through, you know, tough times, you know, depending on what they are impacted by. It's hard to avoid the words like, you know, suffering and stuff like that. I totally get that. But I always have that kind of neutrality with people by using, you know, words like impacted, because it removes that. How do I say this? It removes. How do I say this? it removes the negative. It removes the negativity from, you know, what they have, I guess I could say.
Okay. Did you ever catch yourself using these words before you learned that word impacted? Did you ever catch yourself using these words beforehand?
And a lot.
How did kind of people respond to you?
Not well. It kind of, you know, puts them in this box. It's just like, oh, you know, I have this, I'm suffering from it, you know, and therefore, you know, I will, you know, not, I guess, suffer alone. No, not necessarily that.
That's really,
like,
sad too.
Yeah, it's sad. Yeah, yeah. It's sad. And it's just like, yeah, in some cases, yeah, it can be, you know, sad. It can be. But ultimately what we want to do is we want to try and lift people up to be able to, you know, be a part of society, to be part of community. You know, we don't want them to be in isolation by themselves. We want them to be, you know, a part of us, and we want to be a part of them.
Right? Yeah, that was really interesting, because preparing for this, my mind come back, and you told me that word impacted. I was brought back to this movie from the castle. Now, I don't know if you've seen it. It's an Australian cult classic.
Okay.
I've only seen it 36 times.
Only 36 times.
Only 36 times. Still a few more to go yet.
Yeah, for sure.
But there's a scene where Dennis DeNuto, and he's this lawyer that comes through, and the photocopy is jammed. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll delete a few of the words he uses, but he talks about this photocopy. He's cleared it three times. He's bashing the side of it. And I guess that's where this frustration comes out, you know, like when people are, or when we're trying to talk to people who are impacted by certain challenges that they're going through, sometimes there's that real frustration and community and challenge, right, that we don't want to bash the side of it and kind of get this thing out, but we're trying to get through this communication block. So when you started actually using the word impacted into your daily talk, how quickly do you think that blue screen of death disappeared? And what was the result of that? What came out of that?
I guess, though, you know, with using that particular word, I could see in their eyes that, you know, this is obviously a safe space.
Yeah.
You know, it's a safe space for me to share my story, you know, with people. I mean, I can, you know, very easily talk about my diabetes and my little sister and, you know, my life in general. That's just who I am, but not all people are like that, and that's okay. But when you use these neutral words that help gain perspective of, you know, what someone is impacted by, it creates that safe space with someone for them to be able to, you know, share their story and for us to better understand, you know, who they are. And it's not just about what they're impacted by, but it's also, you know, what have they learnt from their, you know, from what they're going through. Whether that be physical, you know, disabilities or intellectual disabilities or, you know, mental health and well-being. And that's a big one in New Zealand, but, you know, that's a whole another big topic. But ultimately, it creates that safe space. And it shows them, say, I'm willing to learn and understand without putting this lens of you are suffering from this.
That must be huge too. Mm-hmm. Like for someone that's really struggles to communicate or struggles to get things out and people really don't listen, they label these words on and kind of for the best intentions but seem they've just put them in a box.
Yeah, exactly.
And limited them and...
And labelled them.
And quite often, especially with autism, I know that there's this real frustration of communication takes longer.
Yes, it does.
And the processing and all that thing that goes with it, that must be a real release. Have you got any examples of those where you've actually used these words and you've seen in front of your eyes this, what could have been that blue screen or that shutdown?
I guess... Yeah, actually, believe it or not, I was at a party. It was a birthday party, and I met a young gentleman there. So I'm 33, so I would have been at 31, so, and I think he was about 24, 25, so younger fella. But he had just been diagnosed with diabetes, and he just didn't know how this functioned, or and so when I eventually got to talking with him, and then when he discovered that, hey, oh my gosh, you've got type 1 diabetes, and I distinctly remember sitting outside with him, we're just having a couple of beers, and he says to me, he says to me that, I'm suffering with this now, and I remember putting my hand on his shoulder and saying, no, you're not suffering with it, man. You've just got, you know, a different way of living now, and you're impacted by this. And I remember he kind of looked at me, and he just had, and he, I don't know, it seemed like he was kind of processing, like, I've never heard that before. Even though he was only just been recently diagnosed with this, it was a new lens of him now kind of identifying himself with what he was impacted by.
Yeah, because what sort of, did you notice any of those barriers or anything fall away that could have been there before?
I think he was a bit more open to working alongside his diabetes now rather than just looking at it and going, oh, this is something that I've got, why did I get diagnosed with this? Why do I have this? And to now, and I saw him, last year, and he's doing a lot better now. His diabetes, you know, I think it wasn't just, he wasn't just diagnosed. I think he had it for like 3 or 4 months, I think. But his level of thinking had changed. And so when I saw him next, and ideally he was on the pump, probably about a week before I saw him again, which was helping. But I could see that just by that one moment with him and explaining to him just that, like, you know, this is not something to be afraid of or something to be, you know, kind of woe is me. It is now something that, you know, that can work alongside him and say, I'm not suffering from this. I'm impacted by this. So what can I do to change my ways to help, you know, get better?
I love that because that gives agency.
Yes.
And those words give agency rather than just, well, I'm a passenger and this is it.
Pretty much.
Oh, okay. So it takes an incredible amount of empathy and pretty sharp eye to constantly catch when someone else is on the verge of this blue screen meltdown. Mm. If this was me, and it is me in some places, you have to be offline somewhere. You have to kind of have time to recharge the battery for yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't know this about you, but apparently your partner gets an absolute laugh out of you playing horror games.
Absolutely.
Because you're easily startled.
Yes.
And literally launching off the couch,
yep,
nearly spilling your tea when a jump scare comes out. When you've had a massive week, what does losing yourself in these big moments actually do for you? And I'm just like, I'm almost there now watching this and going,
so
how do you relax?
It's a funny thing I say to my best friends. So I've got a few best friends that I play with. You know, we all play different games and we stream our games to each other and stuff. But I have this funny thing, and I don't mean it seriously, but I play stressful games to de-stress. It's a weird thing.
you're fighting fire with fire.
Exactly. I play a lot of games. Like people when they meet me, they're like, you know, oh, you're such an extroverted person. It's like, yeah, I'm an extroverted person at work and you know, going out and whatnot. But when I come home, I'm a hermit. I'm a homebody. Like, you know, I want to be in front of my computer playing games. I want to be hanging out with my partner. I want to be playing with my cats. And, you know, I definitely like to be, you know, more so indoors. But yeah, playing the horror games, it's literally just for my partner. I'm not kidding. Like she, I remember there was this one time. I don't know if you've ever heard of the movies or the games Resident Evil. So we've been getting through. We've got a couple more games to get through. But there's this one scene where this guy is chasing me. I have this thing about things chasing me. It's a little bit scary. Honestly, the next door neighbors could have called the cops, and it's like some little girl is being, you know, something's happening. but that definitely wasn't her; it was definitely me. But also the story, the story element of the games is a big thing for us. We love sitting together and just kind of experiencing the game to, you know, go attached to the characters and their story and their struggles and their triumphs. You know, I love kind of, you know, being engrossed in those stories.
Mm.
But I also love playing very complex, intellectual-based games, I guess you could say. You've heard of the game Minecraft, right?
Yes,
you've heard
of that?
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. So I don't play Minecraft. Ages ago I did. But I play what I would call Minecraft-esque games. So it's, you know, building and crafting and all that kind of stuff. There's actually a game that's developed here in New Zealand. It's called Stationeers. And so you get, you know, pick a, you know, from a range of planets. So you've got Mars, you've got the Moon, you've got Europa, so like that icy cold moon off Jupiter. And so I'm on Europa at the moment. It's very challenging. You know, it's constantly minus 150 degrees at all times. And so you have to build a base, but you have to have the right pressure. You have to have the right air mixture. You have to have, you know, the right amount of power. You have to have power generation. And you have to hook up all the cables to all the lights and all the machines by each cable throughout the entire base.
Oh, wow. Wow.
You have to have a furnace and you have to have, you know, all these, you know, different pipes coming into it and out of it, you know, with the right gas mixture to light the furnace, to smelt alloys and stuff like that. It's very, very, very complex.
See? Wow.
And there's also food growing, so you have to have the right amount of water and the right amount of heat and the right amount of pressure, otherwise the plants die. And if your plants die, you can't, you know, grow potatoes and all that kind of stuff. It's very, very complex. those kinds of games, you know, are both stimulating and relaxing for me.
So, and that's what I was going to ask you. With all of that complexity, mm-hmm. those games, the jump scares, mm-hmm. how does that, and the relaxing part of that, mm-hmm. how does that bleed out into your normal life? Does that give you more patience, or does that do something else to you?
That's a good question. Patience. I mean, I've kind of had, you know, how can I say this? I've grown my capability with patience, you know, with my little sister, definitely started there. But that's actually a really good question. I guess in terms of, you know, these games, which are, you know, take a lot more time and take a lot more effort. Yeah, I would say it does bleed out into other parts of my life to help me, you know, to build that patience, you know, and especially when it comes to people, like, you need to have patience with people regardless of what you're doing. I've got a couple of my best friends would say, it's like, oh, Mike, you're so impatient. It's just like, I'm impatient in different aspects. But when it comes to, you know, people, you know, it's definitely a core component to building that relationship with someone and understanding who they are. So, yeah, that's actually a really good question. I never kind of really thought about that.
Okay, yeah, because you've basically summed up this entire philosophy. Mm. Yeah, for those that are listening, I've mentioned a couple of times that I work at Foundation. Mark and I have worked over the years, mm-hmm. kind of in different spheres, I suppose. But that's exactly what we do in Foundation. Basically, we just build about capacity and long-term independence, but we give people space to be themselves first, because one of the things I found out earlier on is you can have all the best intentions in the world, but you can't just force someone to do something because you think it's good.
Absolutely.
You have to give people space to discover things and be themselves at the same time.
Mm.
So Mark, if someone's listening to you right now, or listening to this right now, and they've got a mate or a family member who's clearly overloaded, about to hit the blue screen, what's something actual in the real world that they can do, you know, ditching the pity and helping them rebuild in their own terms? What could they do practically, you think?
Ooh. I guess in terms of if they are impacted by, you know, whatever it could be. And as hard as it can be to reach out to people, but to reach out to people of the same community, I guess, to have that understanding of, you know, that one, you're not alone. So, you know, for, you know, diabetes, for example, I was part of a diabetes group for a little while. And being in connecting with people, and believe it or not, when I joined this group, I thought, oh, you know, I've got my own, you know, I'm impacted by this. I have my own specific set of challenges. But when I walked into this group, you know, they kind of looked up to me a bit of looking at, like, how well I was looking after my diabetes.
Wow.
I was like, hang on, I thought you guys were doing really, really well. And they were kind of, you know, looking up to me, and it was quite, not liberating, that's not the right word, but it was welcoming. It was really welcoming. Mm. It was just like, wow, like, and I'm a leader, and I want to be able to share my kit there with people to, you know, help their lives improve. But I guess for those who are just, you know, struggling with, you know, that blue screen, like you mentioned, is reaching out and doing your best to try and reach out to people of, you know, similar circumstances. I think that's really, really powerful. Mm. Community is really powerful.
Yeah.
Because you can, you know, learn tools, you can learn, you know, really, really powerful things by being in and you know, within a community that really understands, you know, what people are going through, whether that be mental health or physical, intellectual disabilities. I mean, you do the same thing with Aspire, you know. Yeah, you have, you know, your whānau, you know, come in and be a part of that community and to be a part of something. I mean, that's what all humans want to strive for, right?
Oh, absolutely.
We want to be a part of something. So, yeah, I think, you know, looking, you know, trying to, you know, find, you know, the right community for you will help, you know, kind of avert yourselves from that blue screen, so to speak.
So that's awesome, because we've got this a change in vocabulary that opens up space. Mm-hmm. That word impact, I love that. Mm-hmm. And that's the essence of this podcast, the small things that matter. One word can change not only the perspective, but unlock someone so that they can communicate. Yeah. They can be who they're supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly.
And then community. I love that because we're all about community and relationship. And in fact, actually, Foundation, most of our spaces revolve around food.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yeah.
Carbs.
Yeah.
just add carbs.
Well, white bread is my enemy, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I'm not impacted by carbs, but I'd say that I will. But that's an awesome reminder, Mark. You know, 1 minute you've got people completely frozen, hitting that blue screen of death because of everyday labels. They feel isolated. Then you step back and one simple word from your mom taught you to clear their – it's almost like I'm thinking now she gave you the cheat code to unlock everything. Yep, so absolutely. There's no need to pull the plug, no need to slap it on the side. Just that one word, unlock the everything. The whole system reboots. They open up. They get to stand on their own 2 feet, which exactly is what life's all about, really, isn't it? So beautiful stuff, Mark. And thank you for sharing the story.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Join me again for another conversation next week. And you can listen to any past episodes on your favorite podcasting platform. I'm Tim Bray, and this is Small Things That Matter.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.